Greek study.
Yep.
It must have been Karis, I think you were wanting to think about that question.
Yes. So our preference, like your preference, would be to probably delete it, that definition. It's much easier to rely on national definitions and so forth.
Civil defence, and we had the slip on the road which stopped the traffic.
Yep.
Basically meant that the vehicles that were stuck on both sides of that slip had no communication with anything.
Was that one that guy videoed?
Yep, there was a video of, because it was in continuous motion for about a week, I think.
Yeah.
But the one of the questions being, obviously.
Yeah, well, basically, being sparse and being both favourable pretty much build sites for commercial reasons, but there has been the RBI sites and the RBI too. There's also the highway black spots that are coming, so that would be something that the council should be approaching and doing some planning with us, maybe approaching the government for some funding to provide some service in there.
Yep. There's a large blank spot that starts at the Narrows and finishes.
And dealing with large black spots is probably areas like that is where you'd actually do need to go into somewhere where you're not going to like us going on to, because we want to cover a lot of area with a single site.
But they're all so far away that unless you've got $1 million vision, you're not going to see them.
Yeah, exactly. Most people don't actually see cell sites at all, even if they walk into them. It's only us that see them. We can pick them out from miles.
Yep.
So I think that would be the best option. We don't have any actual plans to do anything through the right at the moment.
Yeah. So that black spot highway thing is something that we're ruling out. You'd be working with the government on?
Well, I believe the councils have to perform a submission and provide a submission back to government to gain funding. They need to look into that, because I think they actually need some radio planning evidence as well. So, quite happy to work with councils to help them with any evidence they require to get funding. I'm sure both of us are. I mean, it would be that we'd probably be establishing a RBI-type site where both Voda and us in 2 degrees would go and establish a site there if it was funded by the government.
That's just every time I go to Macarola, everyone tells me so.
Yeah.
As you're sitting in front of us, thank you for allowing me that leeway.
No, I think that's the advantage of a sort of engagement process, that we probably just do re-establish contacts. And so we're always happy to receive emails and stuff like that if you've got those sorts of issues popping up regularly. So.
Well, that raised another question, which I can't remember whose evidence it may have been, Ms. Martin's evidence.
Yeah.
Commenting that the stage 2 of the fibre rollout had Wanaka on the list, but there was nothing from the Queenstown Lakes District Council.
Yes.
Is that the council actually has to do something to make sure that it is staying at the top of the list?
I think that was a connection with Wanaka and Albertown.
Yes.
So as part of the process for the 3 programs, so for UFB2 and so forth, the government, so Ministry for Business, Innovation and Employment, put it back on local government and communities to identify where the issues were for their communities. And then I understood from memory there was quite a bit of promotion around it last year, and that the opportunity to put up basically interest to government was probably earlier this year. However, I'm sure they can, like anything, just do it basically. And so on the website of Crown Fibre, who will you be the funding vehicle basically, or MB, there is information about that there. And so as part of supporting those programs that the government's identified or areas, which Wanaka seems to be one, even though Queenstown didn't look like it had promoted anything, that Mary and myself could find that it seems to be up there, but it would probably help to just keep pushing it, basically.
I'll remind the appropriate councillors.
Yep.
Any other questions? Oh, yes, there's...
Does the town clerk have the opportunity to respond regarding
yes.
that?
Yes, regarding the environmental decision.
Yes, thank you for the opportunity to read the context around this and compare it to what is in the resulting operative district plan. I agree that your highlighted paragraph very clearly states that as it says here, the policy should be one that gives the council the final say on location within outstanding natural landscapes. And that follows on to an objective and a policy that is effectively a simple avoid policy that is in the operative plan in terms of in the landscapes chapter. However, when you turn to chapter 17, which is the utilities chapter, there's a somewhat more nuanced position taken where that policy position is considered, and I'm paraphrasing here, appropriate for utilities that might have visual effects that you might want to control. And the policy positioning in the utilities chapter is more along the lines of wanting to separate incompatible activities, identifying utilities that might require specific conditions or are visually and environmentally incompatible. Those kinds of wordings are used, and that flows through to a rule framework that does provide for permitted activities in outstanding natural landscapes for small-scale utilities. So all I'm suggesting is that, yes, conceptually, I agree with you that that's what the decision says, but in practice, there's been a nuanced position taken in the operative plan following this decision.
Okay. How would that translate, though, to the proposed plan in terms of this isn't fair, by the way, in regard to the strategic directions chapters, including 3 and 6, where we've already heard a whole lot of stuff about avoid and things like that, and I've basically heard from telecommunication companies at that point. So it's a matter of, I'm trying to work out how do we translate that, as well as the enabling provisions that you've clearly set out, how do we decide on how those should best be meshed together in terms of how that comes down into a rule framework.
I accept you, this is possibly not fair.
I've probably had more opportunity to think about it. Sorry.
Yes. In looking through the Section 42A version of the Energy and Utilities chapter, it would be fair to say that we are so the communications companies are relatively happy with that positioning that's in there. Certainly, some in the objective and policy that I've identified are where practical in there would be helpful, and I have had some discussions with Mr. McHarrison about that, and have identified that that's where the likes of the Auckland unitary plan decisions have landed, and using that kind of phrasing. And really, I look at it through a lens of the operative district plan, and is there really a problem that we're trying to fix here? Are these small-scale activities a problem? And in my opinion, they're not. And therefore, it's appropriate to have an objective policy mix that, and a role framework that enables it.
Just a brief summary of my previously circulated evidence that I'll read out to start with. My name is Sean Dent. I'm a resource management and planning consultant with Southern Planning Group, and I'm here today presenting expert planning evidence on behalf of Tobin Tourism Limited and Skyline Enterprises Limited. The primary matters which have been addressed in my pre-circulated evidence relate to the inclusion of NZS 6807 1994 noise management and land use planning for helicopter landing areas in Table 2, Rule 36.513 of the proposed district plan noise chapter, and the identification of a site-specific noise limit for helicopter operations at the Skyline helipad. With respect to the proposed district plan provisions for the assessment of helicopter noise, I agree with the Council's approach to recognise and stipulate through proposed Rule 36.513 that NZS 6807 1994 is the most appropriate acoustic standard by which to assess the impulsive sound emitted by helicopters. As noted within my pre-circulated evidence, NZS 6807 1994 has been the acoustic standard recommended and used by all of the acoustic consultants I've worked with in regards to helicopter landing area resource consents within the Queenstown Lakes District and further afield such as Mackenzie and Westland districts. While these consultants are not here today presenting expert evidence, I have read and agree with the expert evidence of Dr. Childs, which supports the views of the acoustic consultants that I have worked with. I have acknowledged the limitations of NZS 6807 1994 with respect to sites that are utilised for very few landings, and specifically that NZS 6807 1994 can understate the noise effects in those scenarios. However, I concur with Dr. Charles in paragraph 13.12 of his evidence, where he notes that the proposed rule 36.513 does not work in isolation, but alongside the proposed informal airport rules in chapter 21 of the proposed district plan. These rules include other tools to remedy this effect, such as a limitation on the number of daily flights and a minimum setback distance from residential units, building platforms, and, as proposed by the council planner, other zone boundaries. collectively NZS 607 1994 and proposed rule 36.513 and the informal airports rules in chapter 21 of the proposed district plan provide a far more efficient and effective management regime for helicopter landings and assessment of noise than the operative district plan noise rules, which don't have the scope to consider helicopter noise, and as a result of plan change 27A are incredibly ambiguous. With respect to the imposition of site-specific noise limit for the Skyline helipad, neither Dr. Childs nor Ms. Evans consider it appropriate to impose a site-specific noise limit. This would appear to be largely because the limit sought, 65 dB LDN, is greater than that which was ultimately approved by the Environment Court. I agree it would not be appropriate to impose a noise limit in excess of the Environment Court's recommendations, and have therefore recommended the limit be reduced to 60 dB LDN in accordance with the Court's decision. As identified in paragraphs 50 to 53 of my pre-circulated evidence, there is no guidance in the operative district plan or the proposed district plan noise rules of an appropriate helicopter noise limit for a commercial recreation reserve. In addition, the designation conditions, the Ben Lomond and Queenstown Hill Reserve Management Plan and NZS 6807 1994 do not provide any guidance of an appropriate helicopter noise limit for a commercial recreation reserve. Accordingly, it is my opinion that it would be erroneous of the Council not to impose a noise limit specified as appropriate for this incredibly unique site by the Environment Court. Relying on the existing noise limit and proposed rule 36.513 for this site would mean having to apply the limits of acceptability from NZS 6807 1994 for a residential area in which the Skyline helipad clearly does not sit. My proposed redrafted rule refers to assessment of sound from helicopter landing area in the Ben Lomond Recreation or Scenic Reserves. I acknowledge that this is a very broad area, but have outlined in paragraphs 60 to 63 of my pre-circulated evidence as to how a proliferation of helicopter landing areas, and therefore cumulative helicopter noise emissions, is highly unlikely under the Reserves Act 1977 and the Conservation Act 1987. Overall, subject to the amendments discussed herein and those in my primary brief of evidence, I consider that the provisions of the proposed district plan are an appropriate response to the assessment of helicopter noise emissions within the Queenstown Lakes District. I'm happy to answer the questions from the panel.
Just returning to the Skyline helipad situation.
Yes.
When this plan becomes effective, the Skyline consent won't be altered by the bullet.
No, it won't, but the Court's decision imposed a 5-year time limit on that resource consent, and the reason for that was to enable the Ben Lomond and Queenstown Hill Reserve Management Plan to be reviewed and the ongoing use and operation of the helicopter landing area to be considered through that process.
So how would our decision take account of all those factors? And I also recall from the Environment Court decision that it was concerned also that it's a changing environment up there, and that 5 years was imposed because there could be a further intensification of activities up there over that in that period.
Yes, that was partly the reason as well, and there were two main components in that court case, and one was the health and safety and the other was the noise, and I think the intensification of the activities that you've referred to is more related to the health and safety effects as opposed to directly the noise implications.
Just in paragraph 61, talking there about using the Reserves Act consultation process. Is it, in your view, sound resource management practice to provide a rule that relies on a consultative process through another piece of legislation?
It's my understanding that the Resource Management Act enables consideration of other management plans such as this. So, and
but that's kind of preparing the role. Rather than applying the rule, that's the distinction.
Yes,
asking
you yes, so that you're correct. Ideally, no, but I think in this case, given the intent of the existing management plan that is in place and the experience I've had through the 6 or 7 year process of the resource consent and environment court hearing process for the helipad, and having heard all the views in that process, I think it would be highly unlikely that the existing situation in the Bare Moment Reserve Management Plan for one helicopter landing would ever be increased or exacerbated beyond what it is now.
Just in terms of the rule you propose in the previous page, is it not possible to specify a particular legal description rather that presumably is smaller than the entire reserve? Or is that not the case?
I believe that would not be the case. Even if we were to specify a legal description, it would still be a particularly large area.
Or is there a leased area?
Skyline has a lease area of just over 4 hectares on the top of Bob's Peak. What I'm trying to achieve with this rule is that we are, or on behalf of Skyline and Totally Tourism, I am presently looking at alternative helipad landing sites and looking to remove the existing landing area at present. But as I'm sure you appreciate, it's a very constrained lease area up there, and we are looking at areas on the periphery of the existing lease, which falls within the Ben Lomond Scenic Reserve, which is under the administration of the Department of Conservation. So the intention with my proposed rule is to try and provide some flexibility to find an appropriate alternative site. And I did look at other ways in which maybe that could be achieved, such as specifying a maximum distance of any future helipad from existing facilities within the Skyline lease area. But as you're aware, Skyline Enterprises are also going through a notified resource consent process at the moment for an expansion of their existing buildings, and those particular points are possibly likely to change through that consent process.
Okay. Is there an aspect of this that's likely to come up in the mapping hearings as well?
Yes, potentially. The original Skyline Enterprises submission, which seeks a commercial tourism and recreation subzone be placed over their existing lease areas and facilities, also sought to deal with the helicopter noise limit within that zone. And from the maps, I can refer you to Appendix A of that submission. There was a map that generally indicated the areas we would like to have that zoning imposed over, and that included an area within the Bob's Peak Scenic Reserve. My concern is if that zoning isn't approved in the future, we would be stuck with the noise rule as proposed now.
I'm just thinking though logically too, that perhaps we should integrate our decision making in respect of the two, even though we'll probably have two differently formed panels hearing it, and rather than us coming to a conclusion now, we might be wise until the mapping hearing is had and then reconvening and agreeing with the other panel. Because as it was in there, I was wondering if we needed to do a site inspection to understand the issues.
Okay. I would agree with that approach there.
To
consider it with the rezoning hearing.
Mm. Okay. It will mean we have to present the same evidence twice, of course, but I think that
that's going to be more helpful from our point of view than do you think there's any benefit in this panel doing the site visit?
I guess, sorry, just to take a step back, sir.
I can tell you that the mapping panel will have me on it, but it may not have, well, it almost certainly won't have Commissioner St. Clair, and it may not have Commissioner McLeod. That's the only reason I asked the question.
Yes. I guess the primary reason for wanting to try and discuss it in this hearing is, A, if that rezoning doesn't ultimately eventuate, but also if the area that may be chosen in the future as an alternative helipad actually falls outside of the area we have proposed for the rezoning as well, whether or not it should be considered.
Right, so what you're seeking really is the option to move it somewhere else in this room. Is that?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
In terms of the NZS 6807, might it, from reading all this, there's no disagreement between yourself and the officers. Is that correct?
No.
Yep.
No, we all agree that it is the appropriate standard.
And so the only issue outstanding here is this one regarding the helicopter pad. Okay.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
Just hoping that the alternate site is an alternate site, not a, for the helicopter landing, not a subsidiary site.
Yes, that would be the intention. Yeah, I think it would be in everyone's benefit to try and relocate it from its current position.
And that'll be ongoing discussions with SIBDRAC as well.
I would expect so. Yes.
Job done.
Made a note that we, what we do is we defer the deliberation. We might have some initial discussions, or we'll defer coming to a conclusion on this until the mapping hearing has been held, and then consider it in the context of where that panel gets to. It may make it complicated, but I think it's the only way that we can sensibly deal with the matter.
Mm. Yep, no, I appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Dean.
Thank you.
Thank you.